This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I'm John Iderola and you are a variety of different people. I can't run through all your names, there's too many of you, but I am glad that you're all here because we have a lot to talk about on today's show. We're gonna be talking about trials, not necessarily specifically trials of Donald Trump just yet, but many of the people in his close political orbit, his allies in his attempt to overturn the 2020 election are facing new legal challenges, including some of the most notorious figures of this chapter of American politics. So we're gonna be running through all that, as well as the new conspiracy theories that are cropping up to distract attention away from what these Republican operatives are claimed to have done. So we've got that. We've got battles now spreading across the country when it comes to free speech on college campuses, a lot of hypocrisy on that topic that I can't wait to run through. And this week we had an anniversary of one of the most notorious, humiliating and perhaps distressing moments in American politics in the time that I've been doing TDR. And so we are going to recognize that anniversary and look back on the event and where we've gone since it happened. And then there's a whole lot more besides. That's even just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, Donald Trump with a really weird attempt to sort of pitch himself as still being president, despite the fact that he is very much not, racism on social media, and a religious figure doing some good, saying the right thing. We have been critical in many cases of people who mix their religion and politics, but we want to acknowledge those who seem to have their heart in the right place as well. So we will be doing that a little bit later on. As we cruise towards all that, please hit the like button if you're on a platform and that's a thing that you can do. Some of you are like, there's no like button. I'm listening to a podcast right now and I understand that. But you know what you can do? You can rate and review this podcast, particularly if you're on Apple Podcasts. Maybe I'll read some of those reviews a little bit later on in the show. But with all that said, why don't we jump into this thing? More bad news for Rudy Giuliani, but at least in this case, he is not alone. You might have seen the development yesterday in one of the arenas where the fake electors from 2020 are being targeted. A state grand jury in Arizona indicted Trump aides, including Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and Boris Epstein, as well as the so-called fake electors who backed then President Donald Trump in 2020 after a sprawling investigation that took way too long into the alleged efforts to overturn Joe Biden's win in that particular state. Now, this document also describes people who've been charged in the case, but have not yet been served and whose names are redacted. And that's also, these are interesting names as well that you might recognize, including former Trump campaign and White House official Mike Roman, former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis, notably, former Trump attorney Christina Bob, and John Eastman, another attorney and Trump legal advisor in the aftermath of the 2020 election. So a lot of Trump lawyers cropping up here, at least former Trump lawyers, not only Rudy Giuliani, but Ellis and Bob and Eastman. And I don't know, maybe if I was a current Trump lawyer, I would find this news to be a little bit distressing. Why do so many people who serve him in a legal capacity go on to be indicted and or disbarred? I don't know, just something to think about, I guess. Importantly, Trump himself was not included in this new Arizona set of indictments, aside from being once again named as an unindicted co-conspirator. Number one, in fact, he's the best unindicted co-conspirator. Now, we're gonna return to that a little bit later on because there's more news from around the country about that. But I wanna focus on the people right now who have actually been indicted. And so here are the actual fake electors. You know, looks, if you were to ask ChatGPT to generate an image of, you know, people trying to overturn democracy in Arizona, this is pretty much what it would look like, I guess. And that is them. You can actually see many of those figures in this video. Take a look at this.
With the undersigned being the duly elected and qualified electors for the president and vice president of the United States of America, from the state of Arizona do hereby certify for President Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida.
Do you know what that video is? They filmed themselves doing their fake elector meeting. Like, I know that they're throwing out terms that make it sound better, like duly elected and qualified, but you're not, and you're not. And you importantly knew it at the time. The Arizona GOP actually spread that video because, again, they were a part of this attempt to cast into doubt where the electoral votes should go in Arizona. Now, they were required to go to Joe Biden because, notably, he won the state. But they were trying to overturn that. And it's documented not just in the way that it is in so many other states where they signed documents. They literally held meetings and they filmed the meetings and they publicized the meetings. And so I have to assume these people are in a lot of trouble. Although let's pause for a second to note that what they are alleged to have done, it was a little bit ago. That's true. Now, a crime is a crime, even if a few years have passed. But a few years have passed. And some people think that that is noteworthy. Maybe not always for the same reason. You had Joe Scarborough blasting them for taking 4 years to bring these charges. Now, look, I think it's fair to say that it should have gone faster. I think that almost every one of the legal things that we're experiencing as a country right now, particularly having to do with Donald Trump's activities in the wake of the 2020 election, should have been adjudicated more than 2 years ago. I feel like that would be a lot better for the country. So I understand the criticism. Bear in mind that not every one of them, though, I think is equally open to that criticism. So in this particular case, you have the person who launched the investigation and the charges in Arizona only won election, the Democrat, 2 years ago. Now, the Republican who previously held that position had not gone along with all of what Donald Trump and his cronies wanted in the wake of the 2020 election. But that doesn't mean that they were going to hunt down, like Dog the Bounty Hunter, all the people who participate in it. There's a sort of spectrum of cooperation. And so maybe that's part of why it took so long. But because there was that delay, other people are criticizing it, including the Arizona GOP, who tweeted out the video we showed you previously. The timing of these charges, precisely 4 years after the 2020 election and as President Biden seeks re-election, is suspiciously convenient and politically motivated. This is not justice. It is pure election interference. They do nothing but undermine the trust in our state's legal processes and are clearly designed to silence dissent and weaponize the law against political opponents. Well, first of all, you're mad at Biden, I guess. I mean, this isn't even Biden or whatever. This is, you know, this is Arizona doing this because they're undermining trust in the state's legal processes. You guys put forward a slate of fake electors. Who exactly is doing the most to damage trust in the state processes? The people who committed the crimes or those who are investigating them kind of too slow? I think that you're the bad guy in this case, and I think you understand that as well. Also, clearly designed to silence dissent. Dissent. You didn't tweet about how you were angry about the results of the election. You guys tried to overturn the election. That's not dissent anymore. That's criminal behavior. And you'll notice, by the way, there's no actual defense of what was done. Because what would that actually be? They got a group of goofs and goons together to sign their names to pieces of paper, committing fraud in doing so. So we'll see how this goes forward and we'll see what the timeline is. But because they knew that people were going to react in this way, the attorney general who helped to shepherd this has a video about the timing. So take a look at this.
Hi, I'm Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. Let me start by thanking everyone for your patience as we conducted a thorough and professional investigation over the past 13 months into the fake elector scheme in our state. I understand for some of you today didn't come fast enough, and I know I'll be criticized by others for conducting this investigation at all. But as I have stated before and will say here again today, I will not allow American democracy to be undermined. It's too important.
That is a good message. And when responding to or even pre-responding to conspiracy theories about the timing, you don't want to seem panicked and you don't want to seem anxious, which is why she delivered that in a tone designed to make everyone listening to it fall asleep. Like, she's not concerned about the criticism because how could you be at this energy level? But anyway, look, she's doing good work. That's the important thing. And we will have to see as it actually goes forward. I mean, they've been charged. There's still a lot of steps. I would not expect this to be finalized before the 2024 election, as so many of these cases will not be. Again, due to the timing, although as she points out, there's certainly context there.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Trump's legal problems continue to mount. And I'm not just talking about the criminal trials that he's already facing or those that are already slated to happen at some point this year. Following the Arizona grand jury's indictment against a number of his top allies, including Rudy Giuliani, as well as the fake electors in Arizona, it has been revealed that not only was he an unindicted co-conspirator in Arizona, which is true, he was number one, in fact, the best of them. He's also popping up in another state's investigation of a spinoff version of that scheme, which we'll return to in 1 second. But when it comes to Trump and what he tried to do in Arizona after losing that state in 2020, I just want to remind you of what happened when he tried to phone the governor to get involved and potentially save his butt in Arizona. Take a look at this. So that is apparently Doug Ducey, the governor of the state at that time, checking his phone because he got the notification that Trump was calling and then just setting it aside. And that is, it's so subtle, but it's so aggressive at the same time. Like, I wouldn't want to answer that call either. How many people, including Republicans, have gotten those notifications and just been like, oh God. I don't want to deal with it. And he didn't. And they didn't overturn the results of the election. I mean, some of them tried to, certainly. But there were people, not only Democrats, but some Republicans that didn't play ball. And especially as we cruise towards a coup number two, let's acknowledge that the first time, at least, there were some, not just in Arizona, but in Georgia as well, in a variety of states, that did the right thing. Now, let's return to Donald Trump and his unindicted co-conspiratorship. We want to turn to Michigan. So on the same day that Arizona was dropping their bombshell about the fake electors, Michigan did a similar sort of thing. So you had Howard Schock, special agent for Michigan's attorney general, said that Trump, Mark Meadows, who at that point was Trump's chief of staff, and Rudy Giuliani, once again, who was his personal lawyer, are considered unindicted co-conspirators in Michigan's fake elector case. Now, some of the same names from Arizona also pop up. You have Jenna Ellis. In this case, you have Kenneth Chesbro as well. The cheese bro himself popping up in another one of these. And this statement that revealed how many people are now wrapped up in Michigan's investigation came during testimony in the preliminary examinations in court as the Michigan Attorney General pursues the same sort of charges that we just saw announced in Arizona. And so it's hard, it's like difficult to keep track, not just of all of the different legal challenges that are happening right now, but even those having to do specifically with the fake electors. So we know, I guess the highest profile version of this is happening in Georgia. So you have the whole RICO case and the developments there. That one's actually underway. You have the charges in Arizona, similarly in Nevada as well. Michigan now is apparently getting close, and Wisconsin is also conducting an investigation. And while many of those people are unindicted co-conspirators right now, we're not that far into the process for Michigan. And so it's possible that some of them, if not all of them, can be upgraded to actually facing charges there as well. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot. And I know that with so much of this coming out every day, it's not just hard to track, but it's hard to care, maybe, I guess, when you're just overwhelmed with so many things. But I just want to briefly remind you of why what was done in these seven states, seven different states attempting to do the fake elector stuff. Some of them being states where the outcome of the 2020 election was very close, 10,000 votes, 20,000 votes, 80,000 votes or something. Some of them not close at all. Michigan, by the way, it was like 110,000 votes or something. It really wasn't up for grabs. But the entire point was an insidious attempt to create just enough uncertainty about the process that they can use sort of like a constitutional process that runs parallel to how the law and the Constitution are supposed to work to lend a constitutional veneer to what they were doing. And so there's really three groups that we should be I was going to say angered, but I guess enraged is a better way to point to it. We could not have gotten to where we were without at least two of these three groups. So Donald Trump, who had been president, making the decision that we're done with democracy, I'm not going and I will do whatever it takes to not go. The fact that he made that decision on an individual level should be super distressing. Of course, it's Donald Trump, so we really don't expect any better. The fact that there were so many Trump supporters who were willing to riot and destroy property and possibly kill people to keep him in office, that's also a big issue. And January 6th obviously is the biggest version of that, but it was hardly the only place that suffered violence like this. There were places counting votes and stuff like that that were mobbed by these people for a long time. January 6th was perhaps the worst, and the fact that you had so many of these people willing to literally beat cops to death with their bare hands or with fire extinguishers or with Trump flags, that is a big issue too. And this one with the fake electors, it almost seems too boring or bureaucratic or wonky or like nerdy to care about as much. But I think that we would be wrong to not place as much importance on this, because these people are weirdos too. They're scattered across a number of states, and they're, you know, they hold state level offices or they're activists or whatever. But they also kind of knew what they were doing and they knew what it represented. There was a line that was being crossed here, and it's easy for one despot to cross the line. It's even easy for a mob of regular people who've been fired up by the propaganda that they're hearing to cross the line. But to really change the system of government that we have, it isn't just one mob that's gonna do that, and it's not just one individual. It's a ton of like middle managers of democracy. That's what determines if elections actually have any meaning. And so when we acknowledge the Republicans that did the right thing, whether it's like Raffensperger in Georgia or some of those in Arizona, it's because they can't overthrow it so long as enough of those people stop them. And there were versions of that inside of the Trump administration as well. People in DC that he tried to corrupt, he tried to have them participate in overthrowing the election, and it didn't work. But with the fake electors, you had all of these people willingly signing up to be tools in the overthrow of democracy. And so like when you look at specifically what they did their meetings, they participated in phone calls, they signed the paper or whatever. It can be easy to see that as not as serious as somebody who's like bashing through a window of the US Capitol or something. But they knew what they were doing. They knew the stakes, they knew what it represented. And I really hope that a lot of them pay for it legally. I don't know exactly how much time in prison we're talking about, if that at all. And it's seven different investigations. Obviously, the consequences are going to be different in the different seven different states. But we need to send a strong signal, not just to proto-authoritarians like Donald Trump, that if you cross this line, you will come to pay. But that all the people who would willingly participate, either at the federal level or at the state level, they too need to be warned that these are lines that cannot be crossed, should not have been crossed, and can never be crossed again. Okay, with that said, let's lighten things up a little bit and talk about stupid conspiracy theories. So we have this news coming out of Arizona. I should probably set this up. Big news coming out of Arizona, where all the fake electors, as well as Rudy Giuliani and others, are being indicted for the fake elector scheme. Now, what's the dumbest thing that can be said about this? We turn, as we so often do, to Charlie Kirk, who had this tweet. Poll shows Trump up 5 in Arizona. A few hours later, massive indictment against Trump world, including the leader of the largest get out the vote ballot chasing operation in the country. They need to cheat to even make this election close. Don't give in, keep pushing onward. Dude, just like encourage your side to vote or something. If you're really worried about it being close, just encourage people to vote. Encourage them to vote early. Encourage them to sign up for mail or like mail voting. There are other ways to win an election than this, but so much of that is so stupid. So it is. There's two conspiracies in that. Did you notice? There's two. The first is the reason this happened is because a poll shows Trump up by 5 in Arizona. You dumb, dumb donkey. Do you think they put together this indictment in 3 hours? How do you think this process actually, they've been investigating it for like 2 years now. Or do you think that it's like they're sitting on it and they're like, man, we've got nothing. Stop the presses, he's up by 5, run with it anyway. How do you think that this process actually works? And by the way, let me give you a better version of this conspiracy theory. I shouldn't have to do your work for you. You're the conspiracist, you're doing the work of the millionaires and billionaires. But what you should say is, because it's so stupid to say a poll came out and thus the indictment, say, we've been noticing a pattern over literally months where Donald Trump, despite all of the chaos in the news, remains in the lead in Arizona. In fact, I could show actual evidence for that, which makes a conspiracy theory seem more viable. Take a look at this polling data. This is Real Clear Politics going back. He didn't just get plus five in one poll. That's not evidence at all. He's been leading in polls going back months and months. And that's why they did it. And it took the months to put together the indictment, but that's why they're doing it. That's a better conspiracy theory. Your conspiracy theory is dog stuff. But anyway, there's a second conspiracy theory, which is that they're doing all of this. Okay, all of this, indicting 11 of the fake electors. Rudy Giuliani is there and Boris Epstein, all these people. It has nothing to do with the 2020 election. That's the conspiracy theory. It has to do with just stopping a get out the vote person. Well, first of all, if these people are so critical to your election efforts, stop signing them up for like authoritarian attempts at taking over the US government. Like that would protect your ability to get out the vote in the future. But the idea that all of this is being done so that they won't whip enough votes or something in Arizona, that is so utterly stupid. And look, I don't want to be too critical of him, because this is what his job is and the standards are very, very low. And so those two incentives produce dumb, not even barely thought out conspiracy theories like this. But that is not why these people are facing charges. They're facing charges because they committed fraud in an attempt to nullify everyone who voted in Arizona. That's what they did. That should bother Charlie Kirk. That should bother literally everyone, because by the way, so far the only fake electors have been those trying to ignore the votes of the Democrats and give the Electoral College votes to Republicans. But in theory, Democrats could do this. And perhaps if there are no legal consequences for all these efforts, we could see that in future elections. I don't want to see that. I assume that these right-wing goons don't want to see it either. So maybe we take it seriously now. Maybe we cut this thing off before it starts infesting other elections. Anyway, the Attorney General of Arizona already tried to get out in front of this. It was a good effort, but it's not going to work because they have their incentives. They have to make everything a conspiracy. In any event, we're going to stop on that for right now. We have a lot more to talk about, especially these protests that are going on college campuses around the country. So we're going to take a short break, but stick around because we'll get to that in just a moment. Trigon J. Mark says already voted twice today. Don't cheat. Everybody just vote once, but vote once every day. Thank you. And with that said, let's jump into our next topic.
Some colleges are banning free speech on college campuses. Well, no more, because I'm about to sign a law that protects free speech on college campuses in Texas. Shouldn't have to do it. First Amendment guarantees it. Now it's law in Texas.
That is Greg Abbott taking a strong stance that he will definitely not come to regret in a few years, supporting free speech on college campuses. As he says, he shouldn't even have to do it because the First Amendment already guarantees those rights. But just in case, he'll repeat himself in law. If you're on a college campus in Texas, you have a right to free speech. It's constitutional, it's legal, it's not going anywhere. Stay tuned. Now, that legislation that he passed just a few years ago would require universities to allow any person to engage in free speech activity on campus, create disciplinary sanctions for students who interfere with the free speech activities of others. That is now an aggressive protection of free speech rights, and establish a process for addressing complaints of potential free speech violations. So not only do you have that right, but if anyone tries to interfere with you, we are gonna get them, because that's how much we care about free speech in Texas. He even tweeted about it, again saying it's crazy we have to pass a law. That's how obvious these rights are, okay? Now let's test how much they actually meant any of that. University of Texas Palestine protests led to more than 30 arrests just in the last day, including a Fox 7 photographer. They're coming for Fox. So a bunch of people, simply because they support Palestinians' right to not be blown apart, have come together, as has happened in many college campuses, and they're advocating for that. They are using their free speech rights, both their speech literally, but also their ability to assemble, both of them being those First Amendment rights that Greg Abbott thought were so obvious that we shouldn't even need to have a law, but now we do. And so it's crazy that Texas State Police are detaining protesters and they're literally locking people up and they're assaulting photographers. All of these are violations of the First Amendment and thus will need to be investigated according to that law. And it's great to have an opportunity like this for a politician to clarify what they meant when they said something and how they're standing with it. Now he's not. No, Greg Abbott tweeted, arrests being made right now and will continue until the crowd disperses. These protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Assuming it's people speaking in support of Gazans. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled. So your free speech rights as a college student on campus are so obvious and already well established in the Constitution that we shouldn't even need to talk about it, but we will to pass a law to protect them. Wait, not those free speech rights. You have free speech rights in Texas, according to Greg Abbott and the Republicans, so long as you say things that they like. If you say things that they don't like, if you advocate for things they don't support, not only can you potentially be expelled from the college, you could be arrested. I cannot imagine a more vicious, violation of your free speech rights, unless they were to literally start gunning people down. And the week is still young, so we'll see. By the way, you can at least point to, in Colombia, there was a person, we're not even sure if it was a student, who held up a sign that was very supportive of Hamas and advocating for violence against Jewish students, obviously unacceptable. There have been chants that were unacceptable. In this case, it's like a brand new protest. There's not even evidence of that. The cover story they've provided in other cases isn't even there. So Greg Abbott is just willingly jumping into violations of First Amendment rights because he doesn't like the speech that they're engaging in. That's all it is. And by the way, he on some level seems to acknowledge that this is an incredible about face on this topic that he never really meant it. It was pure hypocrisy. Now he's advocating for colleges to revise their free speech policies. So it's not even that he hates this speech so much that they should be expelled or locked up. We're done with the whole thing now. Going forward, you won't have those rights. That's how much he was angered by these students holding positions that he didn't agree with.
Thank you all for being here today. We have several members of Congress here, and we're here today at one of America's preeminent academic institutions on a very important day and a very important time. Enjoy your free speech. You cannot censor and silence viewpoints you disagree with. That is not American. You do not understand what it means to respect the First Amendment.
That is Speaker Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House of Representatives in a bizarro land, because that is very much what he's trying to do. He, not only Mike Johnson, but the cast of ghouls and goblins around him have very much had their entire mission in life to silence viewpoints they disagree with, very specifically on college campuses. And there's a special bit of sarcastic irony to his enjoy your free speech rights. He didn't vocalize the while you still have them, but I heard it loud, clear, and I think most of the people in the crowd did. Around him, he had, was it Patricia Fox, I think it was? Elise Stefanik was there. All they've done this year is hound administrators at college campuses to crack down on people engaging in free speech, holding positions that they don't agree with. Silencing those viewpoints has been their modus operandi the entire year. That's what they're doing. And we're going to get to more of the Mike Johnson, but I just want to briefly point out the thing that has bothered me the most about this entire thing. And they, I think it, they understand that that's that this is what they're putting forward, but they don't care. And it's this: Mike Johnson, Virginia Fox, or whatever her name is, Elise Stefanik, care 1,000 times more about college campuses voicing opposition to civilians being murdered than they do about civilians being murdered. They have rage for the president of Harvard. They have indignity for the president of Columbia. But when it comes to the actual mass murder of civilians, women, children, babies, nothing. They don't care. I mean, if it bothers them, they're certainly not talking about it. There's no fiery performances in congressional hearings. They don't see the problem with that at all. The only thing they have a problem with is people disagreeing with him on that. Young people who have not had, you know, like, I guess the hope that we can have a better world crushed out of them by the slow, you know, advance of years, or they haven't, like all of those Congress people, been so wholly bought by the wealthy and powerful in American society that their job is to make sure that nothing actually changes. There are people, young people at these college campuses who are advocating for their values, advocating for a change in the US posture towards this conflict. That is what they are supposed to do. That is also, by the way, what they have always done. These sorts of protests are not new. How are they so surprised that they're happening? I remember, I am old enough, unfortunately, to remember the tent city at the University of Connecticut when we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. It lasted for a couple of years and it generated some of this sort of opposition. Now, you didn't have the same sorts of ghouls and goblins in Congress, so it didn't rise to those levels at that point. But this is part of what college is: caring about what's going on, thinking that it can change, and trying to make that happen. And I understand that these right wingers don't like their speech, but you guys have kind of backed yourself into a corner through years of pretending to give a damn about free speech. I mean, we talked about the Greg Abbott thing. This is so comical at this point. Like, I understand that you're fakes and phonies and hypocrites, but when you've made something your brand, could you at least pretend to try to have it be your brand? It reminds me of Dave Rubin writing a book, or having someone write a book for him, called Don't Burn This Book. Like a year before he decided to join up with a nationwide effort to ban as many books as possible around the country. These people are clowns. And they're mostly clowns because they can be, because the people that they're being clowns for care as little about these topics fundamentally as they do. But that said, there was more of Mike Johnson. I want to play a little bit more of his speech at Columbia.
My message to the students inside the encampment is go back to class and stop the nonsense. Look, if we want to have a debate on campus about the merits of these things, let's do that. But you can't intimidate your fellow students and make them stay home from class. Think about that. Is that right? Do you think that's right? Stop wasting your parents' money, Congressman Lawler says. I think that's right.
Last one. Anti-Zionist Jews inside the camp that are celebrating Shabbat.
I don't know who's in that camp over there, but I would tell you that this is unacceptable, and the American people are demanding accountability for it. And that's why we made the trip here today. That's why this press conference is important. We want this administration and the administration of every university campus around the country to bring this to account and to bring this lawlessness to an end. And that's what we need to do.
Yeah, screw Mike Johnson. So he contradicted himself utterly inside of just that clip. So he says something reasonable like, don't intimidate people. Now, there have been some actual things that seem to be designed to intimidate people. The guy who held up the Hamas sign or whatever, that's naturally intimidating. And then there's the effort to say that simply the fact that there are people that hold these positions is intimidating. I don't agree with that literally at all. But he implies, let's just have a debate, implying that we can talk seriously and also stop wasting your parents' money. Utterly condescending behavior towards them. And then a reporter asks a question, a dipping of the toe in the water of what this debate might look like, which is to acknowledge a fact that runs contrary to their narrative. What about the Jewish students that are participating in this that don't support the Netanyahu government and don't support the military strategy in Gaza? Oh, I don't know about them. And I don't care. What do you think? I came to Columbia to learn about the situation, to talk to the actual students? No, I don't care. First of all, he very much knows that there are Jewish students involved in that. They literally held a Seder in the camp in Columbia. But it is incredibly inconvenient to point out that there are Jewish students involved in this when you are attempting to pitch all of the speech you disagree with as being fundamentally and inalterably anti-Semitic. Because then you'd have to make the case that those Jewish students are anti-Semitic, and that gets a little bit rhetorically difficult, which is why he just pretends to not understand it. Well, maybe you didn't know going into this, Mike Johnson, but you've just been informed that those students are there. They exist. They are worthy, I think, of consideration. Why is it that you immediately wrote them off? Would you potentially like to meet with those students? They might be able to teach you a little bit about their perspective, about the views of students on this conflict, but he had no interest, obviously. And it gets even dumber from there, because as bad as Mike Johnson is, as bad as all those people, the Congress people he brought to Congress are, you have people like Josh Hawley and Tom Cotton calling for the National Guard to be sent in. Tom Cotton went on to say that it's like an incipient pogrom at Columbia. Now, Tom Cotton is a moron, so it's entirely possible that he doesn't know what words are or how they work, but implying that because there are people sitting in a tent that you disagree with, they're probably gonna start butchering people tomorrow seems a little bit insane. And if you're going to be sort of saying, if you're gonna try to hold the position that I see a threat in this situation, maybe you're not the right messenger for that, considering that about a week ago you were encouraging people to murder pro-Palestinian protesters, to throw them off the Golden Gate Bridge and drown them in the bay. You're the one advocating for violence in this, not the students. The students are advocating for an end to the murder of civilians. The lines are actually pretty clearly drawn in this conflict, although I understand why he'd want to hide which side of that line he stands on. And we're going to go to just one more thing. I know that I could unfortunately go on for a very long time about this. I want to read this tweet for you about the Columbia protests, about the protests we're seeing all over the place, and the attempts by right-wingers, including Donald Trump, to co-opt this and use it as a political weapon. So Donald Trump posted on Truth Social, crooked Joe Biden would say constantly that he ran because of Charlottesville. Well, if that's the case, he's done a really terrible job, because Charlottesville is like a peanut compared to the riots and anti-Israel protests that are happening all over our country right now. And it's Crooked's fault, because he sends the wrong message every single time. The fact is that Crooked Joe Biden hates Israel and hates the Jewish people. The problem is that he hates the Palestinians even more, and he just doesn't know what to do. And dear God, is there a lot in that Truth Social? So first of all, you are the guy that said there are very fine people on both sides of the Charlottesville, the Nazi march, the explicitly anti-Semitic Nazi march, where they marched and said the Jews will not replace us. You did PR for them in the moment, and years later, you're still doing it, calling it a peanut. I will remind you, Heather Hare was brutally murdered by Nazis there, okay? No one's been murdered in any of these protests that you call riots and protests. Which exactly is supposed to be a riot in this? I understand that you don't like that people hold positions you don't hold and say things you don't agree with, but the mere fact that they exist does not make it a riot. I know that you desperately want it to seem like a riot, but that doesn't make it so. And so Crooked's, Biden's, it's his fault because he sends the wrong message. First of all, they are protesting largely because of what Biden has done. So it's not unfair to say that Joe Biden is a part of this. But Donald Trump has to pretend that the reason they're opposed to Biden isn't what it is, so that Trump can benefit. And I'll break that down in a second. But quick follow-up question, what exactly would be the right message for Joe Biden to send? I mean, let's say that we accept the ridiculous comparison that this is the same as the Nazi march in Charlottesville. Should Joe Biden come out and say that there are very fine students on both sides of Columbia? Should he do that? Would that make you feel better? And then the last bit, Donald Trump ties himself into rhetorical knots. He ends in saying he just doesn't know what to do. But I would make the case that Donald Trump doesn't know what to do with this, because he desperately wants to say that Joe Biden hates Israel and hates the Jewish people, okay? He wants to say that even though Donald Trump is the guy defending the Nazis who want to wipe out the Jews, and Donald Trump is the guy who's saying that if you're a Jewish person who votes for a Democrat, you hate Israel. He's the one creating the purity tests for Jewish people. But that said, he can't just focus on Joe Biden supposedly hating Israel. Because wait, I see in the polls that young people don't like his stance, which is, you know, like bowing down to the Israeli military strategy. And so I want to use that. So he hates Palestinians more. So then is he more on the side of Israel? I don't understand what exactly you expect us to take out of it. Seemingly, Joe Biden hates both sides of the conflict, which is weird because he's funding one of the sides. I feel like he's chosen at least one of them. But anyway, this is the nonsense that you're hearing. And I am sure that the students that are protesting at Columbia and all these other places expect to be lied about in this way. This is always how these sorts of protests have been addressed. A case could be made that mass media exists for these moments. okay, to attack these sorts of popular moments. They are a tool for maintaining the status quo, and the biggest threats to the status quo are when people come together and refuse to back down in the face of pressure, sometimes violent pressure, as is being experienced in these protests already. Now, that said, I think that we need to take a short break. I was gonna briefly give Charlie Kirk some credit, but I was just gonna have to take it away right afterward anyway. So we'll skip all that and we'll take a break and come back with more. We're not gonna get to the E block. We weren't, damn it. You guys don't know if you're watching live, but our E block story on the truth of the crime wave, we've been wanting to do it for like a week and we keep not getting time. But anyway, I'll do my best. For now, let's jump into this.
By the way, remember when he was trying to deal with COVID, he said, just inject a little bleach in your veins. He missed it, all went to his hair. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, but you sure seem happy that you did. You seem very thrilled with yourself, Joe Biden. I mean, he even went to Twitter to put it in text form saying, don't inject bleach, Jack, and don't vote for the guy who told you to inject bleach. That's malarkey. So he's very excited about this. And if you're watching this and you don't get what he's referencing, first of all, I want your life. I love that you don't know what that's a reference to. But I am going to remind you because it is one of the singularly most humiliating moments to come during one of the darkest periods of the pandemic. Brace yourself as we show you this.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
That was 4 years ago this week. It feels simultaneously like it was yesterday and like it was 1,000 years ago. And it's a very weird experience to watch that again 4 years later. It is simultaneously, it is so wrong and so twisted that you almost want to laugh because how could that be? How is that not a deepfake? It just keeps getting worse. One of those comments would be the dumbest thing that Barack Obama had ever said in his life. And he fit in a dozen in 50 seconds. And then when you remember the context of it, it's less comical and it's less funny. Because lest you forget, thousands of people were dying from COVID every single day when he said that. When he made a mockery of what our nation scientists were doing to try to cure this, to try to come up with something, as he was the figurehead of a political movement that was undercutting that effort at every step of the way, thousands of people were losing family members and friends, loved ones, children, grandparents every day. And it was a joke to these people. It was a joke to Donald Trump. It was a joke to Fox News. It was a joke to tens of millions of Americans. And I know that even talking about this might be triggering for some of you because there's a very real chance that you lost someone. I lost a family member to COVID in Florida because of another politician who didn't take this seriously, that thought it was one big joke or thought that pretending that it was a big joke was in their political interests. But it was a dark time. And I honestly think if you just started watching the damage report in recent days, there's basically three periods of the damage report, okay? There was like the first year and a half, and then there was the pandemic era where we were broadcasting out of my one room home. And every day we were breaking this down and we were talking about those that were dying from COVID. And we were going through all these comments. And now we've moved on to this other period. But it suddenly becomes relevant again, because if Donald Trump becomes president, we might experience another incident like that. I don't know if it'll be a pandemic or some other sort of crisis, a military conflict that we get dragged into. And that video should serve as a reminder of who he is. When we need a leader the most, when we need protection the most, instead we had Donald Trump. And that was a life and death difference. A life and death difference hundreds of thousands of times over. Deborah Birx, who you saw in that video, went on to apologize for the fact that she didn't speak out. She apparently thought that, like, working on the inside, she could curb his worst excesses. It didn't work out that way. Because while this is the video that we're playing, this is the anniversary that we have, it eventually got to the point where he was openly talking about stopping testing in rallies. It got to the point where he was openly advocating for just going for herd immunity. Remember that? Maybe you weren't following politics at that point. You don't know. Their strategy became, we're just gonna let everyone get sick, and those who die will die. And then on the other side of that mountain of corpses, maybe people have immunity. Now, if that was a strategy that could have worked, it would have been the most barbaric thing our government has ever done to its own citizens. And there's a very dark history of things like that. But this would have been an order of magnitude bigger. Of course, we also found out that it wouldn't have worked at all, because you don't generate effective, never-ending immunity against this anyway. And the proliferation of variants made that sort of ridiculous for that reason too. It's just weird to think back on, man. And he could be president again. He could. That guy, the bleach guy, the light guy. Don't let it happen. Just don't let it happen. Okay, with that said, we're gonna talk about one other topic, the few minutes that we have remaining. Whenever we're ready, let's jump into this. The Arizona GOP is currently scrambling to do absolutely nothing about the 1864 abortion ban that is set to go into effect. Some of them are freaking out. Some of them seem quite happy to let that insane relic of a bygone era determine what rights people have. There are a few Republicans who are doing the right thing, and they worked with Democrats in the state house of Arizona to actually vote to repeal that bill. There's been several attempts to do that, and it finally succeeded thanks to the Democrats as well as three Republicans. GOP representatives Timothy Dunn, Matt Gress, and Justin Wilmeth were Republicans that came together with Democrats to have that repeal happen. Now, that doesn't mean that it's been repealed. It still needs to pass the state Senate, and it needs to be signed by the governor. The governor, who's a Democrat, says that she will sign it, and it seems very likely that it will pass the Senate as well. But this was the most difficult step. And look, we can critique these individuals and debate why exactly they were willing to vote for the repeal. Is it because they recognize that this law should never have been allowed to go into effect? Or is it just to protect themselves because they're in districts where they have difficult reelection bids? But regardless, they did vote in the right way, and they are paying the penalty for that, being criticized and even punished by the state GOP for working with Democrats in this area. The Speaker of the Arizona House, Ben Toma, said, "We should not have rushed this bill through the legislative process. The pre-Roe law has been on the books for decades. Today, we are rushing to judgment." First of all, it has not been on the books for decades. It's been on the books for a century and a half. That is how ancient it is. And also, we're rushing to judgment to go back to the law that we had. By the way, abortions are still gonna be banned after 15 weeks. There's still a ban that 3 years ago, 4 years ago would have been considered extreme. That's what we'll be going back to. I would ask, why are we rushing to put this 1864 bill into effect? If you think that is what the law should be, you can pass it. You can write up a new version and you can pass it. What's the rush to strip people's rights away? I would say that if you're gonna be in a rush to do something, when it comes to people's rights, it should be to ensure them, to guarantee them, to protect them. But they have different priorities. And by the way, just moments after the vote, it went beyond just criticism. The House Speaker Pro Temp, Travis Grantham, announced that Gress, one of the three, would be stripped of his seat on the House Appropriations Committee. Appropriations committees are important committees. Gress notably voted with Democrats in all three of the attempts to repeal the anti-abortion law. All three of them were publicly condemned by members of the caucus. It seems like Gress is the one who suffered the biggest actual consequence. He's being taken off of a committee. Think about how rarely that happens. And what is the crime that Gress committed? He voted in favor of his constituents. Arizonans in general, just like people around the country, do not support this bill. They want it overturned. He did what his constituents want, and he's being punished. And now I know some Republicans wanted this to be repealed because they don't want it to be a campaign issue. Well, I don't know. The fact that the Republicans are now doing a crusade against their own members who helped repeal it, I feel like that could probably be involved in some sort of campaign ad, but I leave it to the Arizona Democrats. In any event, Matt Gress, that individual, said, "I refuse to buy into the false notion pushed by the extremes on both sides of this issue that we cannot respect and protect women and defend new life at the same time." So don't get ahead of yourself and assume that Matt Gress is going to vote to like make abortions free as they were for decades or anything like that. Again, the law will still ban you at 15 weeks, but at least in this case did the right thing. Now, we will see with the Senate, they're conducting a read of the abortion ban repeal there. We're going to see what ends up happening with this. And much more importantly, there's of course going to be the Arizona ballot measure to hopefully enshrine the rights to the abortion, to an abortion in that state's constitution. So we'll see if that succeeds. That's unfortunately all the time we have for the show for the first hour. More to come in the aftermath. Don't go anywhere.